Hi, everybody. I'm Lisa Burwell, your host of V-Speaks, Conversations with Heart and Soul. We're in season four today, day one. This is our second interview, and I'm sitting with two partners, entrepreneurs, tastemakers, deal makers, and we have David Richard in the house and also Chef Tom Catherall. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nice to be here.
You're welcome. I'm glad you're here. So you two met fairly recently in Florida, and that's a good story, but set it up for the audience that you both co-own Asia 30A in 30th Avenue, which is a beautiful restaurant, and the food is magnificent.
Incredible.
I am so impressed, and I've told David this several times, but I don't talk to you as often as I talk to David, but it's amazing. And the experience in there is white glove. I mean, it's really, really well done.
Yeah. Well, it's a jewel box.
It is.
I mean, the design was incredible design. And we get so many compliments on the food every night. It's embarrassing.
It's, it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I can't believe it.
But it's nightly.
It is.
It is.
And the staff is incredible. They've come such a long way. We were talking about that earlier, how you know, when we first opened, we were striving to try and have like this Houston's type of
service.
Yeah, service, which is very hard to get to. But they're as close to, they're not there yet, but they're as close as they've ever been. So very proud of them.
And who is doing the training? I mean, you can tell it is impeccably managed and a well-run operation. But where are you finding these people?
Well, our first manager came from Houston.
Okay.
So, so she was with us. She set up a lot of those systems.
Okay.
And then we just took it from there and just keep trying to build on that.
Okay. I mean,
David's a budding restaurateur, so he really brought the service along.
Yes.
He won't take kudos for it, but he did.
Well, yes. I mean, in the brief time that I've known David, I will say that my nickname for him is the deal maker, right? I mean, he is the deal maker, and he seems to be able to acclimate to any situation so far that I've been able to see. And your pedigree of being a certified master chef of one of only 70 in the country is a unmatched pedigree. And
thank you.
We are so blessed to have you here. And I ate for the first time. I hate to say this. I don't even have that much time to even go out to dinner anymore, but I ate in your restaurant Saturday night. And
At Lola.
Yeah. And I was blown away how good that food is.
The food is better than it has to be.
I know.
Sure.
I always say that. And our prices are very, very reasonable,
for the quality
that we serve.
Yes. I know. And it was fun in there. Very busy all night. And then, you know, obviously the experience right around the corner.
Yep.
It's good that you can go back and forth. At Asia, the restaurant's only a year and a half.
Correct. Yeah.
And you're just killing it, you know. You're doing so well, and that reputation is just going to continue to build. Because, I mean, how you build a business, and definitely how you build a restaurant, is word of mouth, right?
Sure.
And you have an amazing word of mouth. You just go in there once, and you know, oh, my gosh, this is, like, amazing. And consistent.
I was hoping it was V Magazine that would make us.
I've got great material to work with, so it's going to be very easy.
Yeah.
What do you want to do when you're famous? I think you're already famous.
Yeah.
We're nearly famous.
Nearly famous.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could do a reality show of you both being nearly famous.
Yeah.
So tell the backstory about how you two met only a couple years ago.
Well, David would come in to Lola, you know, we see this baldy-headed guy sitting on the end of the bar, and he'd order oysters. He'd order some really good food. I've never seen anyone eat as much as him and stay as skinny as him.
Yeah,
you know, because he pumps iron and all that other stuff every day,
right?
Which is great for him.
Yeah.
And
he's great. He goes around and talks to everybody. So
I'm representing the restaurant. Yeah,
yeah.
I know. And I want to meet my guests.
Right.
You know, that's why people come back.
Yeah. Yes.
And we have so many regulars at Lola and Asia.
Oh, I bet.
And it's a family. It's like Cheers.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. It really is.
Yes. But do they go back and forth? Patrons go back and forth? They can't decide which one they're going to go to?
Well, they eat Lola more.
More, they do. They do.
Because of the prices.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
It's not cheap.
Raise
in Asia.
Your prices.
If it looked like Asia, I would. You know,
I
spent $250,000 building Asia. We spent $1 million building Asia.
Yeah,
Lola,
yeah.
Asia.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's a difference.
Yeah, it's really well done.
I want people when they leave say that was really worth it. You know, I've been in tons of restaurants where I left and said that wasn't worth it.
Right.
Yeah.
But when people leave Lola or Asia,
a lot of love goes in our food.
Yeah, in the food.
Yeah.
So, we buy the best quality ingredients. Mm-hmm. It's easy to make great food with great ingredients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I was not disappointed at all. David was telling me how good it was, and then like the fresh ingredients and all that, and then. I'm eating it going, oh, gosh. Like, it exceeded my expectations.
That's what I like to do.
Okay.
Exceed everyone's expectations.
Yeah, it was.
In both restaurants.
Yes, in both. I agree.
All right. So the backstory. At the end of the bar.
Yeah, yeah. Start.
And is there Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday?
I'm like that. When Saturday. When I find a place I like, I just, and I'm comfortable with it, I just, you know.
So we had to open the place for him to eat on Sundays because we're closed on Sunday.
No way. So just the three, two of you are in there?
No, yeah. Okay. I've been asking to open on Sundays.
Yeah, no. Okay. I'm like Chick-fil-A on that.
Right.
Yeah. So then you started making him things that were not on the menu.
Yeah, I mean, he was eating, I mean, we do like 10 specials every day at Lola. And then he was just there and...
Called me one day.
I answered
him like, hello. He's like, hey, Chef Tom, what are you doing? And talking. He's like, I know you're tired of eating Italian food. You can't eat that every day. You know, what you want. Pick anything.
I was like, corporate chef for Omni Hotels. And so I spent 2 months in New Orleans.
Yeah.
And so I learned to make gumbo there and shrimp etouffee and thing. Okay. I made him gumbo. He's like,
was that not great?
I've never had a bad
He said, it's not going to be as good as New Orleans. I said, well, you try it.
Okay, you know what? I do remember that. I saw it on the menu and I looked at him and I was shaking my head. And he's like, what? And I'm like, sure you want to do that? And he's like, what? I said, I'm from New Orleans.
Right.
You got one shot with this. Yeah. And that's
and it blew me away.
Yeah, wow. He blew me away. Yeah. Well, I didn't know he spent time in New Orleans. That was one of his stops at your hotel there.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. So you can cook anything.
I can cook anything.
Had 14 restaurants in Atlanta. For how many years did you have 14 restaurants?
Almost 30 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, I started with the first one, then 2 years later, the second one, 1 year later, the third one.
It takes time to get to 14.
So your reputation is absolutely, in the culinary world, you're the bomb.
I was on the U.S. culinary team. I got a gold medal, perfect score. Wow. I'm a certified master chef. Even that guy next door just said, whoa.
Yeah, he knew you.
No. He just asked who I was.
Okay.
And then I told him. And then he was blown away.
Yes.
So, I've got the credentials.
You do
But I have the stuff to back it up.
You do.
That's a
And
difference.
Do you still love it today as much as you
if
do
If I didn't
before?
Love it, I wouldn't do it.
No, he does.
Okay.
He does. You could see it when he cooks meals at his house. It's incredible to watch him pull all of that together. Yeah. He's not the neatest person about doing it, but when it comes together, it looks incredible.
Yeah.
Leslie and I wind up on kitchen detail at,
cleaning up.
But it's worth it.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, how did you then decide, let's do a restaurant together? How did that happen?
We talked about sushi and Asian food.
Or the lack thereof.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the only place here was Shaka. I guess, and Florida Fish House.
Yeah.
Right. And so he would go to Florida Fish House. Yeah. And I did too. I like Florida Fish House.
Yeah.
And look, they're not knocking any of those places. It was I just thought it was odd that with the clientele that you have in Rosemary Beach and Alice Beach, that you didn't have that top tier, super high ingredients, the fish, the Wagyu beefs and all that. I just didn't understand why that wasn't there.
Yeah. And then, before it even opened Lola, there was the Barbacoa Mexican restaurant
where
Asia is. And so I went to the guy that owned that, and his father put up all the money. And I said, they weren't busy, so I said, do you want to get out of the lease?
Right.
And he says, I'll sell it for $300,000. I said, I'll give you $30,000, not $300,000.
Right.
And then
he took it?
No.
Oh.
he wasn't going to do it. But I went around to see Brian Corr, who owns the property, and his father used to come in all my restaurants in Atlanta because his father's from Atlanta.
Yeah, that's right.
And Brian used to come in, Twist, and all the restaurants. Oh, you're Tom Caffrell.
Mm-hmm.
And then more than a week later, I got a phone call from Brian Corr. Would he be interested in that space for an Asian restaurant? I said, absolutely.
And it's crazy the timing, right?
Of all,
that's right.
Then I called him. I said, "Look, we've got a space."
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great space.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I really.
But it wasn't before.
No, I remember what it looked like.
They had nothing on the patio.
I know.
And the food was terrible.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's why it's not there.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the guy, instead of getting $30,000, got nothing. He got put out.
Yes.
But not paying the rent.
Yeah.
Well, that's a very good deal.
Yeah.
For you.
Yeah.
And you.
It was good.
And
us. Fortunate.
They get to go to Asia.
Yeah.
Because it's so good. So that's a kind of an awesome way to start everything. And then you just, like, you can tell you have some good synergy between you, so you have a good
we've been partnership. Since the right. day we met, I think.
If it wasn't my Leslie, it'd be my him.
Oh, that's great. That's so great.
Now, we have, I don't know. I mean, even if we've had a disagreement, it's settled and squashed in within seconds.
So that's so good.
Yeah.
We've had some.
Yeah?
We have.
Well, that's the best testament to a real relationship anyway. Yeah. Right?
Sure.
I mean, you don't really know if you have a good relationship until you can fight and make up, right?
Well, we've been in bed with each other for like 2 years now.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, that's right. We can't get rid of one another. We're stuck.
Yeah.
So let's take the listeners and the viewers back to you as the eldest of 10 in Newcastle, England. And at 15 years old, you leave your house because your mother signs you up for an apprenticeship.
Well, I didn't leave the house at 15. I left the house when I was about 18.
Oh, 18.
When there was no more room in the bed.
Okay.
I slept with my five brothers, like sardines. Yeah. And that was true. And I left school. My birthday is May 28th, Memorial Day over here. And two weeks later, I was signed up for an apprenticeship.
And hey, that was at a time, like you were telling me,
just after the war. There was a shortage of masks and stuff. And so everyone that I knew left school at 15, not 16, yes. 17,
so
18.
Let you go early.
Yeah, you had to go early because there was no manpower.
Ah. And so that was hard and grueling, but that's where you learn your craft, right?
Yeah. I mean, everything came in on the hoof. Birds with feathers on, uh-huh. ducks, chickens, mm-hmm. pheasants, everything. We had to pluck them. Mm-hmm. Pigs came whole. Sheep came with the skin off, but mm-hmm. we had to take all the insides out of them. I mean,
it's a lot more work than a chef would have today.
Did. Yeah. No, right? Nobody does that here now.
Right.
I never saw meat in the box till I came to America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So how did you do that? Like, how did you acclimate from the way you were trained with a different process of preparing food, and then how do you live within the confines of how we do it here, but then your food is really, really good.
Oh, thank you. It was just a natural progression. I mean, there is nowhere around here where you can get a pig whole,
right?
Unless it's a barbecue place. Maybe they've got contacts. Mm-hmm. Right. But just the chickens. I mean, I still buy the best chickens from my purveyor that we can buy. It's not just chicken,
right?
You know, you've got a choice of the grades of grades of chicken.
Right.
We buy the best fish in Asia from all over the world.
You can tell that, for sure.
Yeah, and my sushi chef, he goes and picks it out.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There's a video of him cutting the tuna the other day.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So it was an adaption, but when I had all my restaurants in Atlanta, they were all different.
Mm-hmm.
I had sushi restaurants, I had Asian restaurants. I had one called Asia in Atlanta, and I had one called Lola in Atlanta.
Oh, okay.
So I just kept the logos from both of them and carried them on down here.
Okay, good.
But my Asia in Atlanta was 16,000 feet.
Yeah.
Wow.
We have 2,000 feet.
When we went to do this, you presented another name to me and said, what do you think of this? And then you showed me
Asia.
That catalog, and I said, well, what is this?
Yeah.
And he said, oh, that was my other restaurant. I said, well, why don't we call it that?
Yeah.
But I got the name Asia from Steely Dan.
Yeah.
Okay.
They did an album called Asia.
Yes.
And I always liked the play on the name Asia for Asia. Even though a lot of people call it Asia.
Right.
Yeah. But I think that's perfect. That confusion and people arguing about it is just another.
Yeah. How do you say the name?
Yeah.
I have been all over Asia as well. I mean, I've been
China
3 times, Japan 5 times, Thailand 3 times, Vietnam. So when I went to look what Asian food is, I went all over Asia to see the real thing.
Right.
Like it.
That's why it tastes so good.
Yeah.
Right?
I went all over Italy to try Italian food. Yeah. So I've seen how it's really supposed to be done. And I've worked with a lot of chefs, German chefs, Swiss chefs, Italian chefs, Asian chefs.
What was that? You told me you were in one restaurant and it was like y'all were doing one type of food and then it got bought out and everybody in the kitchen was from
Asia. That was a long time. This is my first introduction to Chinese food, really. In Newcastle, England, where I'm from, I mean, everything was just done the way it should be done. And then I went to Newcastle University for a business degree. And so when I finished there at 5 o'clock, I had to find a job to pay the rent. And I went to this restaurant called Roy's Two Rooms, which was all black tie, the waiters in tails, not tuxedos, in tails, which is better than a tuxedo. And I was there about a month, and I got the head chef's job. And because of my experience, and then the owner came one day and says, we've sold the restaurant to this group from Hong Kong. So everybody's fired except Chef Tom. He's going to do the English food here.
Oh.
So they had a little English side of the menu.
Oh, my gosh.
And they brought all these guys in from Hong Kong that were incredible cooks.
Okay.
But they all had white beater vests on, never wore a chef hat. I'm wearing a white chef's hat and my chef whites and things. And they're coming in with white beaters, cigarettes in their mouth. But the Peking ducks were incredible. I mean, that's where I really learned to do Asian food.
Wow. And were you helming that then? Were you?
Well, I was in charge of the restaurant.
Yeah, okay.
Because some people wanted steak and chips or
something
English.
Food
Right.
But it was a fabulous restaurant.
Well, I don't know where to throw this question at you that I'm about to ask you now, but tell us how you know Sting.
Okay. Sting's from Newcastle, where I'm from.
Okay.
Knew him growing up.
Okay.
Knew him before he got famous. My friend, I played drums for a little bit in a band and a couple of places.
Okay.
And my friend who taught me to play drums was in the band Last Exit. And Sting was in Last Exit before he joined the Police.
Wow.
And so we'd drink more beer than we got paid for the night.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, this is not going to work out.
So if you wanted to go to a Sting concert, you could get tickets.
Well, I haven't seen him in about 50 years.
You should call him up.
Yeah.
I've
got an old picture on my phone in black and white of him.
Oh, really?
In my friends, yeah.
Oh, my God, that's awesome.
And Ronnie Wood from the Rolling Stones, when he left Rod Stewart, I was a chef at Pink Beach Hotel in Bermuda, and he was the nephew of the owner, Andy Newmark, very famous drummer, played with John Lennon, played with David Bowie. He's been on hundreds of top albums. So his aunt owned the hotel, and he was probably working with Rod Stewart and Ronnie Wood, and he had Ronnie Wood come to stay at the hotel. Uh-huh. And Ronnie Wood had just left Rod Stewart, and there was a big fight between them, and he had no money.
Mm.
He didn't have any cash. I'm sure he's worth something, but he didn't have any cash.
Yes.
So he would come around the kitchen every night asking me if I had any food.
Oh, wow.
And so I fed him. I took him. I had a sailboat at the time. I took him up my sailboat.
Uh-huh.
One of his then-girlfriends, who was gorgeous, but he didn't get married to her. we were together for like 3 weeks.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Wow. You've been everywhere. And you've been in Boston, too.
I was in Boston. I was a chef.
My hometown.
Yeah.
Yeah. How long did you stay
there? I love Boston. Leslie went to Boston College.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Leslie, we have a lot to talk about.
So I was in Boston just over a year. The winter was too cold for me.
Yeah, it was cold. It's not as cold now.
Nothing is as cold now. I mean,
well, that's true.
You couldn't even see the cars for the snow.
No, I know.
When I stepped outside the hotel, where's the car? Just covered in the snow.
Yes, that's crazy.
And
but
I was telling you one time we had two famous people that worked at there, and one was Ho Chi Minh. He was a dishwasher, and Michael X was a room service attendant there. And they've got their portraits up in the hotel that they actually worked there.
Wow!
And the chef of Parker's restaurant, which was a high end restaurant there, just died recently. And he owned about five restaurants in Boston. Jasper White.
Okay. What are the restaurants?
Him and Lydia Shire.
Oh, Lydia, okay.
They both worked in Parker's.
Yeah. Oh, Lydia did too?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but he just died last week.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And he's younger than me.
Really?
Yeah.
That's sad. Wow. Wow. So many places. So now you're here.
Yeah.
And doing
I still make a mean Boston clam chowder.
Oh, I'd love that.
Yeah.
And so I read up on you over the weekend, and I read in an article that I was telling Leslie about before you got here that you read an article about some place in Kennebunkport, Maine, made the best lobster roll. So you got on a plane and flew there.
I was watching it on TV here.
Oh, you were here? Oh, yeah, so it was kind of recently?
No, it was about 4 years ago.
Okay, well, that's kind of recently.
Yeah.
But and you flew up there, and then you said it was the best lobster roll.
Lobster roll ever tasted. No, the guy had his own tanks, and the lobster were full, and you didn't make the lobster roll, they kill the lobster when you order the lobster roll.
Yeah.
So it was that fresh.
Yeah.
Out of the tank, in the steamer, crack it open.
You have to make butter. The New England lobster roll for David.
Okay.
Because they are.
Yeah.
Before yesterday.
You got to have the right bun as well. Huh?
Yes, sure. You have to have so many things, right? Many things.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about Asia. So tell me about all the cool things that are going on there. Like, it seems to me like it's so fun going there. It's like a dress-up place, you know?
Sure.
And not every place here is like that. You know, I mean, you have to have it because you feel good when you go out.
Piscato, it's high-end. Surfing deer, kind of high-end.
Yes, yeah. All those.
We're trying to be a one-stop.
Okay.
Like, we're trying to be the late night, like, you know, and I don't have it in me anymore. I'm sure.
No, he's one that stays out till 2 o'clock.
Go from dinner and then go to a club or whatever. So we're trying to have that high energy dining atmosphere with the DJs on the weekends.
Yeah.
And even without the DJ, we're managing the music the same. And that just works.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can, you know, stay, take your time, and sometimes you'll see the girls will get up and dance.
Yeah.
You see them dance into the bathrooms and back, and everybody's just having fun.
Fun.
And
people,
it's an experience.
And people need to have fun now. You need to go to a place that, is, like, everything's too serious.
Yeah.
You need to have a place to really have fun. So when the DJ comes on, do you clear the tables from out there? Is that how you make room?
He sets up in the back.
Okay.
And everything stays the same.
So that's good. So they can still sit there.
Yeah. We extend the hours.
Good.
It's a little later. But
that's good.
It's a dining dance experience.
Events.
If you want to get up and dance, do it to you.
Yeah, yeah.
No
and then
rules.
Also to go, because you have such amazing food, and I've had it to go before, and it's like very well presented and packaged.
How did you like those boxes?
They're really nice. they're like the nicest to-go boxes I ever saw.
No, you ever had your sushi delivered in a Louis Vuitton box?
I have not.
No, the boxes are like Gucci or Louis Vuitton.
I know.
Yeah.
No, it's his idea.
Nice.
He's on the phone to China 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
The time difference.
I was so
worried it shows.
That I was getting scammed, you know.
Really?
But it showed up and it worked.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
Yeah, very nice.
They were great. They were very nice.
Yeah. That's awesome. So I think I asked you this one time when we were having dinner fairly recently, like, you know, you could multiply this concept because it's so good too, but, you know, not necessarily franchise, but maybe open it in other locations too, right?
And that's the plan.
Yeah.
We're hopeful to do that one day once we get, you know, this dialed in and and we're comfortable, then we'll look at that.
Yeah.
What's amazing. So regarding food and the food scene, what was your favorite time in your life as a chef that was just like being a chef and with your notoriety was the best time?
Well, I mean, I worked with Paul Bocuse in Paul Bocuse restaurant in Lyon, France.
Oh.
I've worked in so many different kitchens.
Mm-hmm.
I worked in a 3-star Michelin restaurant in Belgium that only did 28 covers a night.
Wow.
So I went from the highest you could possibly go. No, I haven't been the lowest you could possibly go, but no, it's different. It's a different mindset. It's a different food.
It's a different food, but you still have the same passion for it as you did
before.
You
buy the best ingredients. That's what I learned from 15 to 75.
Yeah.
Have you ever had cooking classes where you're teaching people how to cook? It's not your scene?
Leslie looked at me here. I had one restaurant called Home in Atlanta, and it was Gunter Seeger had it first. He was a high-end chef that only did like 30 covers. When I changed over, we're doing 150. But at Christmas time, I said, maybe I'll do a cooking class for how to cook turkey for Thanksgiving. And Leslie is one of my students there.
Oh, okay. Is that how you met?
I did not hear that story.
Is that how you met?
No, she would come to...
Well, that's the best cooking class you ever had.
Yeah. It's the only one I ever did. But, no, she would come in with the family, with her daughters, to Twist, to Goldfish, to Shower, to Strip. And she didn't know that they were all owned by me until she saw one of the napkins that we had all the restaurants on it. And she goes, this is owned by one guy.
Wow.
And so she did a lot of charity work and different balls.
Yeah.
And then one Christmas she was doing for a charity breakfast. And someone let her down at a different restaurant. And I said, I'll do it, you know, get breakfast for however many people it was. And then she needed a Santa Claus. Yeah. And so my manager, I said, you're going to need Santa Claus for this event.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you were.
I thought he was.
I ended up being Santa Claus.
Okay, well.
Because my manager was scared to do it.
Well, that's true love.
Yeah. And I've still got the picture from when I met her.
How did y'all hold this story back? I've heard so many.
Oh, my
gosh.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's when I fell in love with her, that day.
Wow. She probably fell in love with you that day, too, because you filled a nice spot being Santa Claus day.
That was like 100 years ago.
Oh, my God, that's so fun. That's so fun. So, David, talk about some of the things that you've implemented and how you've seen your staff grow. And, like, I commend you for having such a good staff in there. And it feels really good and professional.
Yeah.
It feels so good.
Well, he's always loved Houston, so it's him mostly putting the Houston's thing on the rest of the staff there.
It's just from experience.
And uniforms.
You know, dining experiences that I've had, which you expect from the food. I'm by no means a chef, but I'm learning from him, you know, a little bit here and there. But I know when something is right or it's not. Like, I can look in that window and tell if they've overcooked something or the shrimp isn't right. And we watch all of that. I mean, even when I'm in there dining, I'm walking around looking, and I'll call them on it. You know, that's not how we do that. Pull it back.
Right. Right.
And just touch the tables and find out how the experiences are and just reiterate that to the staff.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about your background, because how do you go from all the different places that you've been involved with and working to be able to segue all of that? Like, you had to amass a skill set yourself over the years to be able to just do this. Like, I call you the deal maker because you seem like you can jump into anything and make it work because you're smart and
construction.
Sharp. Okay.
Construction. There are way more moving parts in construction than in a restaurant. And some of the projects that I've done have been very large in different areas. I did one in the Caribbean that was in Puerto Rico, St. Thomas, St. Croix, and St. John, and had to manage all those moving parts.
Wow.
So you can't, at least in the restaurant, you can walk in and everything's there. In that project, there's no way that I could have even visited every site. We had 1,000 houses we're working on. So, that's where I got it, construction.
Yeah. Okay, and then several other businesses you've been involved in since then too, right?
I have. Like, energy drink.
Yeah, how did that?
Tell us about the energy.
How
drink.
Did that go? Oh,
was the speed, the speedboats, the diamond rings.
Wait, what happened?
He used to keep engagement rings in his back pocket.
Tell me this.
No.
Oh, because you were a playboy?
No, like my career, it wasn't easy, but it was very fast. And I think, you know, I took a lot of chances, and I got lucky. And it was during the time that banking was easy. It was before the crash in 2008. And, you know, I had a lot of success with my construction company, and I was in a spot that when Katrina hit in Louisiana, I was relevant, and I was awarded some very large contracts, and that was a game changer for me. So that set the stage for energy drinks and vodkas and boats.
Speedboats. Every kind of car. I just had every kind of car.
Okay.
Yeah.
But was the energy drink successful?
It was. And
Red Bull promoted business.
Red Bull, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a big difference between millions and billions. Let me just tell you that.
Okay.
But we were very successful, and the plan was to get their attention in hopes that they would purchase us.
And
they didn't.
Okay.
They just decided to come down with the open checkbook and just start buying all of the customers. So smart move.
Yeah.
So we discontinued that.
Okay.
But Colt as a company was out of Denmark, and they did very well. Brian and Carson sold that reportedly for several hundreds of millions of dollars. So they did good. It was just the U.S. part that we were in probably 3 or 4 states, and they shut it down quick.
Ask my buddy's screenplay.
Oh, I know. Well, that's the next podcast that we're doing, the screenplay. But we can touch on
that. Yeah, that was just another investment thing.
At that same time also?
All during that same
time.
Because I sold out of the construction. So I was starting over. I had a bank account, no business. So I was looking for things to do. And just at the time didn't want to get back into construction.
But you might get back in it again.
Oh, I'm in it now.
You're in it.
Yeah, I've been back in the construction for a while.
Yeah. But it's good to take a break from something and do other things. And you're still doing a lot of different things, too. But
The Caribbean project, all of that came after Katrina. So there was about a 10-year period that I didn't follow construction.
That's good.
And then I'm
but
back
you know
in
it
now. Yeah,
the screenplay and all that, I'm very fascinated
with
that.
Yeah, the book is great,
isn't it? And you agree.
I do.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it because he's here.
Yeah, I know.
It's very relevant of now what's going on.
So
isn't
much
it crazy?
So.
Yeah. It's
even more so than when he invested in it 10 years ago.
Yeah, sure.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's so...
People are going to think we have the same we're getting the same information that the South Park guys and all of them get, right? Mm-hmm. They always know it's getting ready to happen before it happens.
Right, right. Yeah.
Well, the Simpsons.
This was 10 years ago, so you definitely trumped them on that one for sure, because this is like what is happening right now, and I am fascinated by it and want to talk about it more and think that it has a totally a place to go.
I fell in love with that project when I read the script, and the guys that had written it were just incredible people. So I got involved.
So for the listeners, for context, we're talking about a screenplay called Days of Darkness that David is the executive producer on, a project from 10 years ago with screenwriters in New Orleans. And picking it back up, dusting it off the shelves from 10 years ago, and talking and shopping it to become a movie or streaming. And then I'm learning that there are other screenplays under your company, Imminent Productions. So many different things going on. Really, really interesting. I mean, you're a nice addition to the community. The community here, where I have been here for 33 years, actually. Okay. And there's a lot of pioneers and artists and creative people that are just, like, doing things. A lot of entrepreneurial spirit here.
Yeah.
And it feels very good. Mm-hmm. And I always loved it back then. And it continues to have that same thing. But your addition, the addition of, you know, both of you here makes me smile, because, like, it's part of that ethos, but it's, like, next level.
I've met some of the most incredible people.
Isn't it
down
amazing?
Here. Oh, it's unbelievable.
I mean, it's a really good community.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I get so many people from Atlanta that knew me from Atlanta.
Yes. So are you signing autographs when they come in?
They always say, oh, I'm a friend of Tom.
You know. And you're like, who are you?
Yeah.
You have at his restaurant in Atlanta. Yeah, somebody approached you.
I used to have a friend, Tom's card.
Okay.
It was called A Friend of Tom. And you got a 10% discount on your food.
Okay.
Not liquor, but you got 10% off your food.
Uh-huh.
And we give out thousands of those cards. And I was standing at the podium at Prime one evening, suit, shirt and tie on, hoping Leslie's going to come in. And this cinema is there. And this guy came in and said, I need a table where fully books are. I'm a friend of Tom. I said, well, I'm Tom.
I don't
recognize you.
And I have no idea who you are.
And some people will come up, you know, they'll casually dress and will say, I'm dressed okay. I'll say, do you have your wallet? And they say, yeah.
Yes,
you're dressed fine.
Come on. You're dressed fine. Yeah. Oh, that is great. That is so great. So what else do you want to say about your business? Like, you know, just come, well, I'm just going to, you know, start it out by saying, go to Asia if you haven't been there. Go to Lola's if you haven't been there, because two different experiences, but beautiful experiences of celebrating really good food, not chintzing on anything, just having excellent food, right? And
absolutely,
that's what you expect. Yeah. You would hope.
But we'd hope your viewers and your listeners would support us during the winter more.
Yes.
Because the winter is hard to get through here.
And it is hard.
All the money you make in the summer, you put away like a squirrel with his nuts.
I know.
Get you through the winter.
Sure.
So we would like more local winter business.
Sure.
Well,
sure.
We will, in the winter, we will run this podcast even more in the winter.
Yeah.
And then you should reinstate the friend of Tom's card. Then
and we do.
For the winter.
For the winter, we do have some specials for the locals.
So, what are some other specials too? Are there any?
Well, we'll give discounts off the whole
for
menu
local,
and everything for local during the
I do Lola too. Yeah.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. You say a local, you get 10% off.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, our catering.
Yes,
we offer catering now.
Yes.
In-house
for,
catering.
For anything, you'll go just talk about like the
so
and
we can bring the food out, we can leave staff, we can set up the dragons if they want that. And if they want a chef, a sushi chef to stay and prepare the food there, we can do that too.
Yes.
So
that's really cool.
Yes, you will not be disappointed, I will tell you that right now.
Yeah.
If you
it's partake. Neat. It's really neat.
Well, I'm glad you opened. I'm glad you two met.
Well, thank you.
I love it. I'm big fans of it. I think we're going there tomorrow night after our podcast series.
Let me know what time.
With the team. I will. Mm-hmm. And you're gonna stay, David, you're up next. But Chef, really nice to get to know you, I'm, you know.
You're a fan now.
I am a fan. I'm a fan. I need a card. I need a friend of Tom.
If I print it, I'll give you the first one. Okay. With the number 0001.
Okay. Everybody, I hope you enjoyed this podcast as much as I did. These are two fabulous people doing really good stuff. Service, quality of food, and lots of excitement and energy and fun. You must go and go often. Have a good day, everybody. Bye.